Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins, John Russell, Phil Dierking, and Mario Ritter. Later, Steve Ember will present The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Sexual assault charges against a leading expert on Islam have left many European Muslims shocked. The Islamic expert, Swiss-born Tariq Ramadan, took a leave of absence from his teaching position at Oxford University last week. The move came after two French women accused him of rape and assault. Reports of similar accusations were published in a Swiss newspaper. Ramadan has denied the accusations. An Oxford University statement said that both he and the school agreed on his leave of absence. The effect of the accusations is huge, especially in French-speaking countries. He appealed to a generation of young Muslims who came to believe they could follow Islam's teachings and be European citizens. Unlike many Islamic religious leaders in Europe, he spoke in French instead of Arabic at meetings and conferences. Ramadan is the grandson of the founder of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood. The 55-year-old has long had critics. They claim he hid political Islam under talk of unifying society. He was temporarily banned from the United States during the presidency of George W. Bush. The ban was lifted after Bush left office. An estimated 5 million Muslims live in France. They make up Western Europe's biggest Islamic community.
In April, French officials expelled Ramadan's older brother, Swiss clergyman Hani Ramadan. They claimed he was a threat to public order. The brother made news in 2002 when France's Le Monde newspaper published an article he wrote. His story expressed support for stoning adulterers, married men and women who have sex with someone who is not their wife or husband. Tariq Ramadan condemned his brother's position. The assault charges come at a time when a growing number of powerful men have been accused of sexual abuse. It started in early October when media reports described the first abuse claims against American movie producer Harvey Weinstein. Last month, French activist Henda Ayari, a former supporter of the Salafist movement, accused Ramadan of raping her in a hotel room in 2012. Since then, another French woman has reportedly come forward with a similar story. French government lawyers are investigating the accusations.
In Switzerland, a Geneva newspaper reported that four young women claimed they had sexual relations with Ramadan when he was teaching at their school. The four women said they were not old enough at the time to be considered adults. Media reported another rape claim in Belgium. An Oxford University graduate, Ayman Jawad Al-Tamini, published a blog post about Ramadan. It gave voice to an American Muslim friend who described an unwanted sexual advance by Ramadan in 2013. For me, it's not about his political views, Al-Tamimi said. He works for a group opposed to Ramadan, but says he is not part of that debate. Ramadan accuses his critics of making false charges and damaging his public image. In a Facebook post Saturday, he said he remains calm and has confidence in justice. For years, he has called for moderation and openness, he wrote. And these are the values we need most today. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
As the United States pulls back from large free trade deals in the Asia-Pacific, Japan is competing with China for influence in the area. Japan is discussing deals to build a train line in the Philippines, a seaport in Cambodia, and a free trade agreement for countries around the Pacific Ocean. U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, free trade deal in January. That move left 11 countries, including Japan, Vietnam, Malaysia, and Singapore, wondering how to move forward. Japan led the remaining countries to a revised deal at a meeting last week of the 21-nation Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Group in Vietnam. The new free trade deal is called the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. Japan is also increasing its investment in major Southeast Asian countries. Japanese investment in major countries in the region has averaged $20 billion each year from 2011 to 2016. That is more than double the average from the 5 years before 2011. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was among the leaders at the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, meeting in the Philippines this week. The 10-member ASEAN group agreed to upgrade a 9-year-old trade agreement with Japan. A spokesman for Abe, Norio Murayama, said Japan hopes to secure trade routes through Southeast Asia to markets as far away as Africa. Murayama said, "For Japan, the country surrounded by the sea, a maritime order is extremely important." He raised concerns, however, about the safety of shipping through the region. Jeffrey Kingston is a writer and instructor at Temple University, Japan. He said there are concerns that China may seek total control over navigation in the South China Sea. "A lot of Japanese investment, a lot of factories' offshore operations, are located there," he said. China and Japan still face difficult issues linked to Japan's activities before and during World War II. The two countries also have conflicting claims to some small islands in the East China Sea. Japanese direct aid around the world increased by 12.7% last year to $10.37 billion. The foreign ministry says on its website that Japan is seeking to support the goals of human security and sustainable development. Japan wants to do this based on the needs of individual countries. China, however, has proposed a huge development program involving hundreds of billions of dollars. Known as the One Belt, One Road infrastructure campaign, the project aims to link Asia, Europe, and even Africa. I'm Mario Ritter.
Scientists have long believed that a star explodes when it reaches the end of its life. This explosion is called a supernova. NASA, the American Space Agency, describes a supernova as the largest explosion that takes place in space. Recently, a team of astronomers discovered evidence of one star that apparently refuses to die. The long life of this supernova is raising questions for experts who thought they knew how dying stars worked. The star, officially called IPTF-14HLS, is 500 million light-years away from Earth. One light-year equals 9.5 trillion kilometers. It was found in 2014 and appeared to be a normal supernova, growing less bright over time. But a few months later, astronomers at the Las Cumbres Observatory saw it getting brighter. In fact, they have seen the light grow brighter, then weaker, then stronger again, 5 different times. They also found evidence of an explosion in the same area 60 years ago. The findings were reported in the journal Nature. The observatory is based in the American state of California. The astronomers say they continue to keep watch of the star with robotic telescopes around the world. Supernovas normally grow dark after about 100 days. But this one is still going strong after 1,000 days, although it is slowly getting darker. It's very surprising and very exciting, said E.R. Arkavi, who is with the physics department at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Arkavi led the team of astronomers. He said, "We thought we've seen everything there is to see in supernova after seeing so many of them. But you always get surprised by the universe. This one just really blew away everything we thought we understood about them." This supernova is believed to have once been a star up to 100 times larger than our sun. It is possibly the biggest explosion of a star ever observed. The Associated Press says this might explain its unusual ability to survive. One theory is that the supernova is actually several explosions happening so quickly that they run into one another. It could also be a single explosion that repeatedly gets brighter and darker. Another idea is that this star was so large and its core or middle so hot that an explosion only blew away the star's outer layers. This would mean the star's core was left solid enough to repeat the entire process. However, this theory still does not explain everything about this supernova, Arkavi said. Avi Loeb is chairman of the astronomy department at Harvard University in Massachusetts. Loeb was not involved in the study, but he thinks the star's core might be either a black hole or a magnetar. A magnetar is a neutron star with a strong magnetic field. However, there will need to be further study in order to better explain what is happening, Loeb said. Scientists also do not know if this unusual supernova is one of a kind. For now, it appears to be rare since no others have been identified. We could actually have missed plenty of them because it kind of masquerades as a normal supernova if you only look at it once, Arkavi said. However, one thing that everyone agrees on is that nothing lasts forever, not even this supernova. Eventually, this star will go out at some point, Arkavi said. I mean, energy has to run out eventually. I'm Phil Dierking.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about slavery and how it affected the history of the United States. Here is Steve Ember.
Slavery is the custom of one person controlling or owning another. Some historians say it began following the development of farming about 10,000 years ago. People forced prisoners of war to work for them. Other slaves were criminals or people who could not repay money they owed. It is said the first known slaves lived more than 5,000 years ago in the Sumerian society of what is now Iraq. Slavery also existed among people in China, India, Africa, the Middle East, and the Americas. It expanded as trade and industry increased. This increase created a demand for a labor force to produce goods for export. Slaves did most of the work. Most ancient people thought of slavery as a natural condition that could happen to anyone at any time. Few saw it as evil or unfair. In most cities, slaves could be freed by their owners and become citizens. In later times, slaves provided the labor needed to produce products that were in demand. Sugar was one of these products. Italians established large sugar farms beginning around the 12th century. They used slaves from Russia and other parts of Europe to do the work. By the year 1300, African blacks had begun to replace the Russian slaves. They were bought or captured from North African Arabs, who used them as slaves for years. By the 1500s, Spain and Portugal had American colonies. The Europeans forced native Indians to work in large farms and mines in the colonies. Most of the Indians died from European diseases and poor treatment. So the Spanish and Portuguese began to bring in people from West Africa as slaves. France, Britain, and the Netherlands did the same in their American colonies. England's southern colonies in North America developed a farm economy that could not survive without slave labor. Many slaves lived on large farms called plantations. These plantations produced important crops traded by the colony, crops such as cotton and tobacco. Each plantation was like a small village owned by one family. That family lived in a large house, usually facing a river. Many separate buildings were needed on a plantation. For example, a building was needed for cooking. and buildings were needed for workers to produce goods, such as furniture, that were used on the plantation. The business of the plantation was farming, so there also were barns for animals and buildings for storing and drying crops. There was a house to smoke meat so it could be kept safely, and there was a place on the river from which goods were sent by ship to England. The plantation owner controlled the farm and saw that it earned money. He supervised, fed, and clothed the people living on the property, including the slaves. Larger plantations might have 200 slaves. They worked in the fields on crops that would be sold or eaten by the people who lived on the plantation. They also raised animals for meat and milk. Field slaves worked very long and hard. They worked each day from the time the sun rose until it set. Many of these slaves lived in extreme poverty, in small houses with no heat or furniture. Sometimes 5 or 10 people lived together in one room. House slaves usually lived in the home of the plantation owner. They did the cooking and cleaning in the house. House slaves worked fewer hours than field slaves, but were more closely supervised by the owner and his family. Laws approved in the southern colonies made it illegal for slaves to marry, own property, or earn their freedom. These laws also barred slaves from receiving an education or even learning to read. But some owners permitted their slaves to earn their freedom or gave them money for good work. Other owners punished slaves to get them to work. The punishments included beatings, withholding food, and threatening to sell members of a slave's family. Some plantation owners executed slaves suspected of serious crimes by hanging them or burning them alive. Historians say that people who were rich enough to own many slaves became leaders in their local areas. They were members of the local governments. They attended meetings of the legislatures in the capitals of their colonies, usually 2 times a year. Slave owners had the time and the education to greatly influence political life in the southern colonies, because the hard work on their farms was done by slaves. Today, most people in the world condemn slavery. That was not true in the early years of the American nation. Many Americans thought slavery was evil, but necessary. Yet, owning slaves was common among the richer people in the early 1700s. Many of the leaders in the colonies who fought for American independence owned slaves. This was true in the northern colonies as well as the southern ones. One example is the famous American diplomat, inventor, and businessman Benjamin Franklin. He owned slaves for 30 years and sold them at his general store. but his ideas about slavery changed during his long life. Benjamin Franklin started the first schools to teach blacks and later argued for their freedom. Slavery did not become a force in the northern colonies, mainly because of economic reasons. Cold weather and poor soil could not support such a farm economy as was found in the South. As a result, the North came to depend on manufacturing and trade. Trade was the way colonists got the English goods they needed. It was also the way to earn money by selling products found in the New World. New England became a center for such trade across the seas. The people who lived there became shipbuilders so they could send the products to England. They used local wood to build the ships. They also sold wood and wood products. They became businessmen carrying goods around the world. The New England shipbuilding towns near the Atlantic Ocean grew quickly as a result. The largest of these towns was Boston, Massachusetts. By 1720, it had more than 10,000 people. Only two towns in England were larger, London and Bristol. More than 25% of the men in Boston had invested in shipping or worked in it. Ship captains and businessmen held most of the public offices. The American colonies traded goods such as whale oil, ginger, iron, wood, and rum, an alcoholic drink made from sugar cane. Ships carried these goods from the New England colonies to Africa. There they were traded for black Africans who became slaves in the American colonies. The Africans had been captured by enemy tribesmen and sold to African slave traders. The New England ship captains would buy as many as they could put on their ships. Conditions on these ships were cruel. The Africans were crowded together and forced to travel in areas so small they could hardly move. Some were kept in chains. Many killed themselves rather than live under such conditions. Others died of health disorders they caught on the ship. Yet many did survive the trip and became slaves in the southern colonies or in the Caribbean islands. Black slaves were needed to work on Caribbean sugar plantations. The southern American colonies needed them to work on the tobacco and rice plantations. By 1750, almost 25% of the total number of people in the American colonies were black slaves. From the 1500s to the 1800s, Europeans sent about 12 million black slaves from Africa to America. Almost 2 million people died on those slave ships. Historians say English ships carried the greatest number of Africans into slavery. One slave ship captain came to hate what he was doing and turned to religion. His name was John Newton. He stopped taking part in the slave trade and became a leader in the Anglican Church. He is famous for having written the song Amazing Grace.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.